Chapter 111. And Mira felt herself rebuked, as Deronda had done. But to be rebuked in this way by Mordecai made her rather proud. "I see no one so great as my brother," she said to Mrs. Merrick one day that she called at the Chelsea house on her way home, and, according to her hope, found the little mother alone. "It is difficult to think that he belongs to the same world as those people I used to live amongst. I told you once that they made life seem like a madhouse. But when I am with Ezra he makes me feel that his life is a great good, though he has suffered so much. Not like me, who wanted to die because I had suffered a little, and only for a little while. His soul is so full, it is impossible for him to wish for death as I did. I get the same sort of feeling from him that I got yesterday when I was tired and came home through the park after the sweet rain had fallen and the sunshine lay on the grass and flowers. Everything in the sky and under the sky looked so pure and beautiful that the weariness and trouble and folly seemed only a small part of what is, and I became more patient and hopeful." A dove-like note of melancholy in this speech caused Mrs. Merrick to look at Mira with new examination. After laying down her hat and pushing her curls flat, with an air of fatigue, she placed herself on a chair opposite her friend in her habitual attitude, her feet and hands just crossed, and at a distance she might have seemed a colored statue of serenity. But Mrs. Merrick discerned a new look of suppressed suffering in her face, which corresponded to the hint that to be patient and hopeful required some extra influence. "Is there any fresh trouble on your mind, my dear?" said Mrs. Merrick, giving up her needlework as a sign of concentrated attention. Mira hesitated before she said, "I am too ready to speak of troubles, I think. It seems unkind to put anything painful into other people's minds, unless one were sure it would hinder something worse. And perhaps I am too hasty and fearful." "Oh, my dear, mothers are made to like pain and trouble for the sake of their children. Is it because the singing lessons are so few and are likely to fall off when the season comes to an end? Success in these things can't come all at once." Mrs. Merrick did not believe that she was touching the real grief, but a guess that could be corrected would make an easier channel for confidence. "No, not that," said Mira, shaking her head gently. I have been a little disappointed, because so many ladies said they wanted me to give them or their daughters lessons, and then I never heard of them again, but perhaps after the holidays I shall teach in some schools. Besides, you know, I am as rich as a princess now. I have not touched the £100 that Mrs. Klesmer gave me, and I should never be afraid that Ezra would be in want of anything, because there is Mr. Deronda, and he said, it is the chief honor of my life that your brother will share anything with me. Oh, no. Ezra and I can have no fears for each other about such things as food and clothing. But there is some other fear on your mind," said Mrs. Merrick, not without divination, "fear of something that may disturb your peace. Don't be forecasting evil, dear child, unless it is what you can guard against. Anxiety is good for nothing if we can't turn it into a defense. But there's no defense against all the things that might be. Have you any more reason for being anxious now than you had a month ago?" "Yes, I have," said Mira. I have kept it from Ezra. I have not dared to tell him. Pray forgive me that I can't do without telling you. I have more reason for being anxious. It is 5 days ago now. I am quite sure I saw my father." Mrs. Merrick shrank into a smaller space, packing her arms across her chest and leaning forward to hinder herself from pelting that father with her worst epithets. "The year has changed him," Mira went on. "He had already been much altered and worn in the time before I left him. You remember I said how he used sometimes to cry. He was always excited one way or the other. I have told Ezra everything that I told you, and he says that my father had taken to gambling, which makes people easily distressed, and then again exalted. And now it was only a moment that I saw him. His face was more haggard, and his clothes were shabby. He was with a much worse-looking man, who carried something, and they were hurrying along after an omnibus. Well, child, he did not see you, I hope? No. I had just come from Mrs. Raymond's, and I was waiting to cross near the Marble Arch. Soon he was on the omnibus and gone out of sight. It was a dreadful moment. My old life seemed to have come back again, and it was worse than it had ever been before. And I could not help feeling it a new deliverance, that he was gone out of sight without knowing that I was there. And yet it hurt me, that I was feeling, so it seemed hateful in me, almost like words I once had to speak in a play, that I had warmed my hands in the blood of my kindred. ... For where might my father be going? What may become of him? And his having a daughter who would own him in spite of all, might have hindered the worst. Is there any pain like seeing what ought to be the best things in life turned into the worst? All those opposite feelings were meeting and pressing against each other, and took up all my strength. No one could act that. Acting is slow, and poor to what we go through within. I don't know how I called a cab. I only remember that I was in it when I began to think, I cannot tell Ezra. He must not know. ... You are afraid of grieving him? Mrs. Merrick asked, when Mira had paused a little. Yes, and there is something more, said Mira, hesitatingly, as if she were examining her feeling before she would venture to speak of it. I want to tell you. I cannot tell anyone else. I could not have told my own mother. I should have closed it up before her. I feel shame for my father, and it is perhaps strange, but the shame is greater before Ezra than before anyone else in the world. He desired me to tell him all about my life, and I obeyed him. But it is always like a smart to me to know that those things about my father are in Ezra's mind. And can you believe it? When the thought haunts me, how it would be if my father were to come and show himself before us both, what seems as if it would scorch me most is seeing my father shrinking before Ezra. That is the truth. I don't know whether it is a right feeling, but I can't help thinking that I would rather try to maintain my father in secret, and bear a great deal in that way, if I could hinder him from meeting my brother. You must not encourage that feeling, Mira, said Mrs. Merrick, hastily. It would be very dangerous. It would be wrong. You must not have concealment of that sort. But ought I now to tell Ezra that I have seen my father? Said Mira, with deprecation in her tone. No, Mrs. Merrick answered, dubitatively. I don't know that it is necessary to do that. Your father may go away with the birds. It is not clear that he came after you. You may never see him again. And then your brother will have been spared a useless anxiety. But promise me that, if your father sees you, gets hold of you in any way again, and you will let us all know. Promise me that solemnly, Mira. I have a right to ask it. Mira reflected a little, then leaned forward to put her hands in Mrs. Merrick's, and said, since you ask it, I do promise. I will bear this feeling of shame. I have been so long used to think that I must bear that sort of inward pain. But the shame for my father burns me more when I think of his meeting Ezra. She was silent a moment or two, and then said, in a new tone of yearning compassion, and we are his children, and he was once young like us, and my mother loved him. Oh, I cannot help seeing it all close, and it hurts me like a cruelty. Mira shed no tears. The discipline of her whole life had been against indulgence in such manifestation, which soon falls under the control of strong motives, but it seemed that the more intense expression of sorrow had entered into her voice. Mrs. Merrick, with all her quickness and loving insight, did not quite understand that filial feeling in Mira which had active roots deep below her indignation for the worst offenses. She could conceive that a mother would have a clinging pity and shame for a reprobate son, but she was out of patience with what she held an exaggerated susceptibility on behalf of this father, whose reappearance inclined her to wish him under the care of a turnkey. Mira's promise, however, was some security against her weakness. That incident was the only reason that Mira herself could have stated for the hidden sadness which Hans had divined. Of one element in her changed mood she could have given no definite account. It was something as dim as the sense of approaching weather change, and had extremely slight external promptings, such as we are often ashamed to find all we can allege in support of the busy constructions that go on within us, not only without effort, but even against it, under the influence of any blind emotional stirring. Perhaps the first leaven of uneasiness was laid by Gwendolyn's behavior on that visit, which was entirely superfluous as a means of engaging Mira to sing, and could have no other motive than the excited and strange questioning about Deronda. Mira had instinctively kept the visit a secret, but the active remembrance of it had raised a new susceptibility in her, and made her alive as he had never been before to the relations Deronda must have with that society which she herself was getting frequent glimpses of without belonging to it. Her peculiar life and education had produced in her an extraordinary mixture of unworldliness, with knowledge of the world's evil, and even this knowledge was a strange blending of direct observation with the effects of reading and theatrical study. Her memory was furnished with abundant passionate situation and intrigue, which she never made emotionally her own, but felt a repelled aloofness from, as he had done from the actual life around her. Some of that imaginative knowledge began now to weave itself around Mrs. Grandcourt, and though Mira would admit no position likely to affect her reverence for Deronda, she could not avoid a new painfully vivid association of his general life with a world away from her own, where there might be some involvement of his feeling and action with a woman like Gwendolyn, who was increasingly repugnant to her increasingly, even after he had ceased to see her. For liking and disliking can grow in meditation as fast as in the more immediate kind of presence. Any disquietude consciously due to the idea that Deronda's deepest care might be for something remote, not only from herself, but even from his friendship for her brother, she would have checked with rebuking questions. What was she, but one who had shared his generous kindness with many others? And his attachment to her brother, was it not begun late to be soon ended? Other ties had come before, and others would remain after this had been cut by swift coming death. But her uneasiness had not reached that point of self-recognition in which she would have been ashamed of it as an indirect, presumptuous claim on Deronda's feeling. That she or anyone else should think of him as her possible lover was a conception which had never entered her mind. Indeed, it was equally out of the question with Mrs. Merrick and the girls, who with Mira herself regarded his intervention in her life as something exceptional, and were so impressed by his mission as her deliverer and guardian, that they would have held it an offense to hint at his holding any other relation toward her. A point of view which Hans also had readily adopted. It is a little hard upon some men that they appear to sink for us in becoming lovers. But precisely to this innocence of the Merricks was owing the disturbance of Mira's unconsciousness. The first occasion could hardly have been more trivial, but it prepared her emotive nature for a deeper effect from what happened afterward. It was when Anna Gaskin, visiting the Merricks, was led to speak of her cousinship with Gwendolyn. The visit had been arranged that Anna might see Mira. The three girls were at home with their mother, and there was naturally a flux of talk among six feminine creatures, free from the presence of a distorting male standard. Anna Gaskin felt herself much at home with the Merrick girls, who knew what it was to have a brother, and to be generally regarded as of minor importance in the world, and she had told Rex that she thought the university very nice, because brothers made friends there whose families were not rich and grand, and yet, like the university, were very nice. The Merricks seemed to her almost alarmingly clever, and she consulted them much on the best mode of teaching Lotta, confiding to them that she herself was the least clever of her family. Mira had lately come in, and there was a complete bouquet of young faces around the tea table half as, seated a little aloft with large eyes on the alert, regarding the whole scene as an apparatus for supplying his allowance of milk. Think of our surprise, Mira, said Kate. W, we were speaking of Mr. Deronda and the Malingers, and it turns out that Miss Gaskin knows them. I only knew about them, said Anna, a little flushed with excitement. What as he had heard and now saw of the lovely Jewess, being an almost startling novelty to her. I have not even seen them. But some months ago, my cousin married Sir Hugo Malinger's nephew, Mr. Grandcourt, who lived in Sir Hugo's place at Diplo, near us. There! Exclaimed Mab, clasping her hands. Something must come of that. Mrs. Grandcourt, the Vandyck Duchess, is your cousin? Oh, yes, I was her bridesmaid, said Anna. Her mama and mine are sisters. My aunt was much richer before last year, but then she and mama lost all their fortune. Papa's a clergyman, you know, so it makes very little difference to us, except that we keep no carriage, and have no dinner parties, and I like it better. But it was very sad for poor Aunt Davilo, for she could not live with us, because as he has four daughters besides Gwendolyn. But then, when she married Mr. Grandcourt, it did not signify so much, because of his being so rich. Oh, this finding out relationships is delightful, said Mab. It is like a Chinese puzzle that one has to fit together. I feel sure something wonderful may be made of it, but I can't tell what. Dear me, Mab, said Amy, relationships must branch out. The only difference is that we happen to know some of the people concerned. Such things are going on every day. And pray, Amy, why do you insist on the number 9 being so wonderful? Said Mab. I am sure that is happening every day. Never mind, Miss Gaskin, please go on. And Mr. Deronda? Have you never seen Mr. Deronda? You must bring him in. No, I have not seen him, said Anna. But he was at Diplo before my cousin was married, and I have heard my aunt speaking of him to Papa. She said what you have been saying about him, only not so much. I mean, about Mr. Deronda living with Sir Hugo Malinger, and being so nice, she thought. We talk a great deal about everyone who comes near Pennicott, because it is so seldom there is anyone new. But I remember, when I asked Gwendolyn what she thought of Mr. Deronda, she said, don't mention it, Anna. But I think his hair is dark. ... That was her droll way of answering. She was always so lively. It is really rather wonderful that I should come to hear so much about him, all through Mr. Hans knowing Rex, and then my having the pleasure of knowing you, Anna ended, looking at Mrs. Merrick with a shy grace. The pleasure is on our side too, but the wonder would have been, if you had come to this house without hearing of Mr. Deronda, wouldn't it, Mira? Said Mrs. Merrick. Mira smiled acquiescently, but had nothing to say. A confused discontent took possession of her at the mingling of names and images to which she had been listening. My son calls Mrs. Grandcourt the Vandyck Duchess, continued Mrs. Merrick, turning again to Anna. He thinks her so striking and picturesque. Yes, said Anna. Gee, Gwendolyn was always so beautiful, people fell dreadfully in love with her. I thought it a pity, because it made them unhappy. And how do you like Mr. Grandcourt, the happy lover? Said Mrs. Merrick, who, in her way, was as much interested as Mab in the hints as he had been hearing of vicissitude in the life of a widow with daughters. Papa approved of Gwendolyn's accepting him, and my aunt says he is very generous, said Anna, beginning with a virtuous intention of repressing her own sentiments. But then, unable to resist a rare occasion for speaking them freely, she went on, see, I should have thought he was not very nice, rather proud, and not at all lively, like Gwendolyn. I should have thought someone younger and more lively would have suited her better. But, perhaps, having a brother who seems to us better than anyone makes us think worse of others. Wait till you see Mr. Deronda, said Mab, nodding significantly. Nobody's brother will do after him. Our brothers must do for people's husbands, said Kate, curtly, because they will not get Mr. Deronda. No woman will do for him to marry. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.